Blog Talk Radio.
It's Monday night, and that means it's the latest episode of Graphic Policy Radio, the show that mixes comics and politics. This is the show for folks that knows the G7 and G8 aren't superhero teams. Yes, there we go. As
I like
them.
It.
My goal is to get you to laugh.
Either way, they're being led by Geoforce from that Outsiders.
I more think of, like, are these superhero teams led by Amanda Walker?
All of them are led
or
by
Waller,
her.
I mean.
Yeah, no, they all are. Even the ones that don't know that they're led by Amanda Waller are also led by Amanda Waller.
Yeah, and it just, I was thinking about it, I was like, this sounds like whatever, Team 7 or whatever hell she was part of.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it also sounds like, the other thing that kind of caught me is it sounds like a really crappy Image team from the 90s.
TV8 G7.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
As always, I am joined by my co-host, Alana. How are you doing?
I'm great. Good to be back on the show.
Yes, after a week off, we're back.
We took a week off for... St. Patrick's Day, apparently, which is confusing to me.
Well, we could have done a drunken show, but that would have been interesting. I feel everyone else...
Sorry?
No, I was going to say, there was a whole bunch of other podcasts that do it while drinking, and I didn't want that to become our shtick.
No, that's not my shtick. But I actually spent my St. Patrick's Day evening being really freaking angry because the state senate in New York had decided to vote down the DREAM Act, which would have let kids who came to America undocumented get in-state tuition for college. And the symbolism of screwing over immigrant kids on a holiday that's supposed to celebrate immigrants, St. Patrick's Day, was just too freaking much. I was like, you've got to be freaking kidding me. It was just so ridiculous to do it that day. It's typical because the people who voted against it don't understand that, you know, actually all these people from all these different countries are immigrants, and they only have it in their mind that immigrants are scary brown people. So they're voted like racist assholes when, in fact, you know, their parents are immigrants. Their grandparents are immigrants. It was just so disgusting to have that happen on St. Patrick's Day of all days. Like,
hey,
screw you, anti-immigrant vote in New York State on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I didn't even put together that that vote was on St. Patrick's Day. I saw the vote went down. I'm just like, oh, what a shock, New York. Such a weird state when it comes to politics.
Yeah, we have a lot of crazy racist people. It's not unusual. A lot of states have the same problem with crazy racist people. But like many other states, ours are overrepresented in the electoral bodies because the districts are zoned so that rural areas have more representatives than cities. So, but anyway, moving along, that's how I spent my ragey St. Patrick's Day of last week.
I'm sorry that you spent it that way instead of enjoying it.
Yeah. God. So anyway, but we're back.
Yes.
For your heavy-handed dose of politics and comics.
Yeah, so which we want to start off with? We've got two books that we want to discuss, and then we've got I thought was kind of a funny article from Cracked about politics and comics.
Oh, yeah. I think it's really funny, too. I actually should just commend Cracked in general for being one of the most subversively progressive media outlets around. People don't really know, but Cracked, they have a lot of folks writing for Cracked magazine, a really insightful, good progressive politics, and it is very clear from the writing, you know?
It's just good writing, period.
Really funny.
Which
blows
my mind. I mean, it's, Cracked, from what I always remember, was basically the poorer version of Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's always the idea that I had was you go for Mad, and then if you had money left over, you get Cracked. but in the age of the internet, I mean, they actually do some really, really good stuff. I mean, they do have...
Yeah.
I'm just looking at their videos. Next to six scientific findings that prove cats are evil, they have four social criticisms hidden in Sonic the Hedgehog games, which both funny and goofy. The latter is actually somewhat insightful and thoughtful, and yeah, it's an interesting mix of stuff for site. So I guess let's start mm-hmm. with that. We'll go with the cracked.
Okay.
So they had an article of five disastrous attempts at political commentary in comic books. I think it should be both in their own version or, because most of these I don't know.
I'm sorry. I feel like you're breaking up a tiny bit.
Weird. I'm go and we discuss our, if we can come up with our own versions.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. So their number five is Superman ignores the ignores for the economy. This one I don't know. This is from Superman Grounded, where Superman decided to walk across the United States. He dealt with real issues like brain damage, drug dealers, and literal alien immigrants. He makes his way to Iowa, where his backpack across the continent finds himself on a detour, and he helps big industry ruin the environment. So Superman's also contacted by Lois Lane for the story arc, who is taking a part-time job as a stripper. Yeah. So Lois reveals that the factory where Superman just put out a giant chemical fire isn't as safe as it looks. Superman uses his X-ray vision that and confirms, yes, the place is horrible. However, the workers at the plant beg him not to expose the conditions of the factory since it's the only major job provider. Superman thinks about it and decides that it's a fair trade and moves along.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see here. And then Lois
really
plans to publish her... Yeah, this is just bizarre. Yeah, so... Rather strange. I don't even know how to describe it. You could go with the art where Lois does seriously look like a stripper.
I know, and it's like, you know what, if you are a stripper, then you can totally wear that. That's part of your accepted work clothing. But if you're a reporter, you probably can't wear that unless you're reporting, like doing like a new journalism reporting piece as a stripper, and then you could wear that. Yeah, yeah. There is like no real concept of the clothing that women wear in different situations, you know? The things that you might wear out clubbing at night are not really what you'd wear to go to work, for example. It's just, yeah.
I would also go on
a limb. Unrecognizable.
Yeah,
she's
well,
unrecognizable.
Yeah. I didn't even know it was Lois until I read the article.
Yeah.
And the other,
that's
I'm
the story.
Thinking.
I actually kind of remember that miniseries when it happened. I remember it was supposed to be like Superman reconnects with the common man. But everything he says in those panels is really stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, reading, yeah, it's bizarre. I would think Superman might be, I don't know, little pro-environment. And
yeah,
maybe figure out
I
the
think
solution.
He'd have the long view of things, you know. And he's like, I'm just telling you guys to clean it up, clean up your stuff. As if it's the workers' responsibility to make the plant not be polluting, like that's completely up to the workers. No, like, you have to do something with fucking management. They make these decisions. It's not like the workers who work at that plant were the ones who are responsible for dumping chemicals or whatever the heck it is that they're saying that was going on. Like, that's the company, and that's how the plant was built.
I'm kind of fascinated that he leaves the workers alone to be in this unsafe plant.
Mm-hmm.
As
like,
if
I'm
this is a good
to
idea.
To fix this building. It's like,
yeah.
No.
I'm Superman. I could do this in 2 seconds and make this entire place super safe. But no, I'm going to leave you and your corrupt management to take care of it.
Yep, exactly. And I'll never be spoken of again. There's no follow-through.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also a thing where Lois, I guess, threatens to expose the factory through journalism, and Superman tells her not to.
He basically was like, woman, you do what I tell you. And he was really bullying and weird.
Well, as Crack puts it out, points out that it's not like, you know, freedom of the press isn't part of the American way.
Well, we've learned that now. You know, now we know we're not allowed to have it.
So, yeah, it's a little strange. Number four, they've got number four as Marvel's dictators and mass murderers cry over 9/11. I do remember this one. I wound up picking the various tributes and checking them out. I wasn't really collecting comics at that point in time, but this was something I kind of had to see. There is an infamous scene at one point of Dr. Doom crying, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense because Dr. Doom, one, is an American and has his own country, Latveria. Two, I'm pretty sure he's attacked and probably killed God knows how many Americans in those fictitious attacks. You have Magneto, who's was a terrorist at one point, though he's reformed now, and he might have been semi-reformed at that point in time. Kingpin, who was a mob leader and killed who knows how many people through the various illicit things that he's done in his life. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. As the writers pointed out, there were other Marvel villains, so they could have used in that shot to indicate that, you know, this is an atrocity that's so real that even villains are upset by it. But those were not the villains that you would have chosen to have be upset about it. It's pretty farcical.
As Crack points out, that Dr. Doom is really crying because he was planning to destroy the Baxter Building, and in this case didn't get a chance. It just, yeah, it's a little weird. Magneto, I think I could kind of maybe understand a little bit. Kingpin, maybe, just because, you know, he's a New Yorker. Dr. Doom makes no sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't know. I guess I could see Kingpin crying over 9/11 would be hypocritical, but not unbelievable.
Yeah,
he's not trying to, like, kill everyone in New York. He just wants all of their money and doesn't care how he gets it. So
yeah, and he wants
to control
it.
But it was just ridiculous to have Dr. Doom, who's actively at war, you know.
Yeah, it's weird. I can't quite figure that one out. The Dr. Doom makes no sense. I remember seeing that and being like, what the hell were they thinking? Good thought, wrong execution, I guess.
You know, I don't envy the comic creators who were working at that time trying to figure out what the heck to do in response to 9/11. It was a really challenging question for comics to take on.
I think that, you know, for the most part, they did somewhat tastefully. I know, like, the big one was, I know a few of them, they had, like, that 9/11 graphic novel that went to charity. So, like, mad props to them for doing that. And I can't imagine most of them had, like, their heads in the right places when doing this, so it's a little weird.
I sympathize that people probably were not in their full operating capacity at the time they were writing this, but it shows.
Yeah. It's one of those that I know, I'm pretty sure we all saw that, we're just like, oh, it's great that they're doing something, and then, you know, it's been 13 years later, and we're like, what the hell were they thinking? Number three, Anarchy, the anarchist Batman villain.
Who's now the main villain in the new Batman cartoon.
Okay, I was going to bring that up. So I, myself, have finally watched Batman Shadows of Gotham. And he's in it. And he doesn't seem to be a rather...
Oh, really?
It doesn't seem like he should be, like, a very appropriate character for kids' cartoons.
Yeah, well, it's all really intellectually lazy. I mean, in reality, an anarchist would be a great opponent for Batman, since Batman is privilege incarnate and represents the status, the old guard of the city, but that would only work in a story where you were also willing to be critical of Batman. And I assure you that the children's cartoon is not going to do that. So it's really weird. I don't know if they just wanted to maybe be able to make toys of characters they hadn't already made toys of before.
So, yeah, so the reason that he makes this list is because this character, Anarchy, which is, you know, a fairly nuanced idea. It's not quite something that a young kid would really understand, let alone kids who are reading Batman. We're watching probably the cartoon. So it turns out that Anarchy is a naive preteen kid who uses a fake neck and mask to look taller. So it's literally a 12-year-old running around terrorizing rich people.
Surprisingly successfully.
That would be my bigger thing. How the hell is a 12-year-old doing it? So, yeah, I guess they couldn't do the angry high school kid who has multiple copies of the Little Red Book to do this character. I don't know. It seems a little weird.
Yeah.
Rightfully on that list. So let's see what else we got. Number two, basically they just listed Frank Miller's Holy Terror. And yeah. So Holy Terror
almost,
for
that's almost a cheat. That's like a cheat because that's, you know.
Yeah. So Holy Terror, for people who don't know, was basically Frank Miller came up with this idea of Batman fighting Al-Qaeda. DC said hell no, which shows that DC Comics actually has some sort of editorial thought process. So Frank Miller went and decided to twist it to this thing called Holy Terror, that if you look closely, you can actually see where he erased Batman ears and Catwoman's ears and stuff like that to make them look like original characters. When I read it, I believe I summed it up by saying Holy Terror is a holy piece of shit. And everyone has referred to, so the main character is the Fixer and his partner, which everyone dubbed totally not Catwoman. But they basically run around and torture and murder Muslim guys. There's parts of it. It's completely incoherent. There's characters that are borderline racist. The story itself is pretty questionable in the whole racist category. It's fascinating. Yeah, I read it and just shook my head. I couldn't believe that it was so hyped. And I don't know about you, but every comic shop I go to that was open around that time has many, many copies of this book sitting on their shelves unsold.
Oh, yes. It was resoundingly mocked.
Yeah. And what sadly is this was like the first real big release from Legendary Comics, which was an offshoot of Legendary Pictures. And they've put out comics since, but this was not the book to start with.
No.
So Crack sums it up as the whole thing reads less like a comic book and more like somebody illustrated your racist uncle's Facebook diatribes.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely had that same feel.
I
don't have a racist uncle, but I watch other people's racist uncles, so I know exactly what they're talking about.
It's pretty horrible. And the final one that they have as number one is Captain America fights the supervillain Nixon and watches him kill himself.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome, actually.
Yes. So I just feel like I need to read the whole thing. So Captain America, this is from Cracked. Captain America is pretty much the only major superhero who's allowed to be political because, well, he was created as propaganda in the first place. He does Captain America stuff. He punches Hitler in the face. He gets his shield from Franklin Roosevelt. He shakes hands with Bill Clinton. He watches Richard Nixon commit suicide in front of him after being outed as a supervillain. In a storyline that happened to coincide with Nixon's resignation over the Watergate scandal, Captain America fights a group of baddies called the Secret Empire, who are trying to take over the U.S. by way of nuclear bombs. In Captain America number 175, Cap defeats the Secret Empire in Washington, but their leader, number one, manages to sneak away and hides in the White House. Captain America chases the villain into the Oval Office, where he's unmasked and turns out to be a high political officer. Maybe we're just reading into things here. Maybe Cap isn't trying to comment on political scandal that was way out of the depth of mainstream superhero comic. High political officer could be one of those nebulous cabinet members whose job no one really understands, like Secretary of Agriculture, or just a cop who's way into politics and getting blazed, except the writer confirmed that it's totally Nixon, and yes, this was his take on Watergate. You know, ineffably bugging some offices, nuclear obliteration of your own country. It's really a six of one, half dozen of the other. Captain America is so disillusioned by his overwrought version of Watergate scandal that he quits. He puts on a different costume, becomes a nomad, and we all learn a valuable lesson. If you've ever caught in a political scandal, do the honorable thing and flee to your own office before you blow your brains out for maximum symbolic value.
Yeah, I don't know. I can kind of go with that one. You know, I've studied Nixon. I'll roll with it.
It's a little bizarre. I dig it. I like it a lot. Yeah, it tops the list. It's a great piece of comic history.
Yes, absolutely.
So yeah, are there any other, like, you can think of? I've been trying to rack my brains of, like, really good ones over the years.
Gosh. I'm going to have to come back to you with an answer to that one. I know that there've been things I've seen that has been truly grown worthy.
Yeah, so the only one I can see that's coming off the top of my head, and it's not like I totally hated it. There's a conservative writer named Bosch Faustine. I'm probably going to butcher his last name, who just goes on like anti-Islamic rants, and he put out a series called Pigman, I think was the main title of it. And basically, it was like this about the superhero who fights Muslims and about two brothers, and one who was a radical Muslim and the other one who walked away from Islam. And it was one of those, it was like, wow, this is borderline racist and has so many issues. But there's also so many things that are actually kind of fascinating by this that I'm torn. Uh-huh. I was really, really torn reading it. There's a second issue. I never bothered looking at it. But the first one was, uh-huh, it was fascinating.
Well, I know I've seen things. We'll have to reconvene about this in a future episode.
We'll come up with our own list at some point.
Oh, yeah.
But we actually wanted to discuss comics, too. So we've got two books that have come out recently. We're going to talk about Velvet and Lazarus, both by Image Comics. So which would you like to start first?
Let's talk about Velvet.
Okay.
Comic, definitely highly addictive. So do you want to describe it?
Yeah, we'll do the quick description. So Velvet is about a woman who at first we are led to believe that she is a kind of like a secret service, like an MI5 secretary to one of the higher up and ups. In fact, she is way more than that and was an agent herself. She is framed for murder, and she is running around currently Europe to prove her innocence. Very, very cool spy thriller with a 70s vibe. I do it justice?
Yeah, it's a good description. Yeah, yeah. I think so. It's like, I like someone who's saying it was, you know, it's the perspective of the woman who everybody thought was just the secretary, but who was actually the biggest badass of them all.
Yeah. Yes, and she is a massive badass.
And, you know, it's a comic we've definitely praised before. You know, the character is really interesting. She has real inner life. She's not just a generic, tough female. She has a specific personality. I love how she's drawn. She has a specific face. And I don't just mean like, oh, she has a hair that you can identify seeing her, but she has a specific face and expressions, and there's excellent acting in the art, you know?
and she looks like a real adult and not like a child, which I like. And the period costumes are really well done and evocative. And the so yeah, the art is really strong and the story has been really addictive.
Yeah, it's so good. Like, it's just a good thriller, like a good spy thriller with realistic characters.
The story is at a place right now where I think that, you know, if you wanted to get on it, you would need to go back and get the earlier issues, but I'm sure those are still available. Yeah, I think it's one of the most fun edge-of-your-seat comics around, and it's certainly a great example of a comic with a female lead where it's, and, you know, like a character that's worth reading. Is not just generic. She's not a man who they decided to make female so they could draw boobs on her. She and her gender and how her gender, you know, is seen by other people is part of the story as well in ways that are really realistic. And she's an interesting person, and I want to learn more about her. And I think this could be a really good ongoing series. I think this is intended to be an ongoing series, not a mini series.
I think so too. I'm not 100% sure, but as far as I know, it's ongoing.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I also sometimes get the feeling reading the comic that this is something that the guy has sort of researched a lot. I don't know why. I'm no expert on spying, but it has a sort of a grittiness that, I don't know, maybe it's not that. Maybe it's the way the historical points are hit well with a time period. There's definitely research going on in this book.
Yeah, I mean, it's either they've done a lot of research or they've watched a lot of, like, the classic 70s European thrillers. And I don't know which.
Yeah.
And either's fine. Like, I, you know, don't, not going to knock either one.
There was a big shock reveal at the end of this issue. I'm not too surprised at that turn of events. I don't want to give it away. But I didn't see it coming at this particular moment. Really well choreographed fight scene, this issue as well. Oh, actually, brief digression. If you want to talk about comics with really interestingly choreographed fight scenes, everyone's talking about Pretty Deadly with regards to that.
Yep, I can see Pretty Deadly with the fight scenes.
Have you been keeping up with Pretty Deadly?
I think I might be, like, an issue behind.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I've been finding it really emotionally resonant. And, when it makes me sad that, like, you're supposed to be sad, you know, when you're watching art that's supposed to make you sad and successfully evoking that feeling, it's definitely successfully evokes the feelings that she's going for in the book. You can really feel real sort of tragedy there in like the almost like classical sense. You know, there's this one point that is going to drag everybody down and there's no choice to change things, but they're going to fight and try to make it different. Yeah, I guess it's sort of like a Greek tragedy in some ways, while also being a psychedelic spaghetti Western sort of fairy tale / Western Eastern. Definitely a psychedelic book. I think it just keeps getting stronger and stronger.
It definitely is. Like we talked about like the first a couple issues. I haven't totally dug it. I didn't dig it, but as it seems to be going on, I think I'm getting it more and just understanding it a little bit.
Yeah, like you have to just roll with it.
Yeah,
you have to be okay with the fact that it's not all going to make sense right away. But what surprised me is how emotionally affected I felt by reading the last issue. So give it another shot. We'll talk about it on a future episode. But I found this most recent issue to be particularly emotionally, it got me.
Yeah, I mean, we'll hit up next episode or we'll figure out when the next release is and aim for it then.
Oh, so but back to Velvet. What are your thoughts on this new issues?
Like, I love it. Like, I think the series is really solid. Like, I dig the 70s thriller, spy thriller vibe to it. I think it's great that, you know, one, it's a female lead, and they acknowledge it's a female lead, so she uses that to her advantage. She's admitted mistakes.
But that's such a stereotype. Like, there's so many female characters in comics where, like, they always talk about, like, oh, she uses her femininity to her advantage. It's, like, one of the biggest cliches in the book, but...
It is.
It doesn't come off as cheap, really, here, and it doesn't come off as, like, it's no big deal. Like, it definitely is part of the drain of her work.
Yeah, because she keeps on acknowledging it. Like, she will make comments mm-hmm. about how this clearly was stuff she had to do in the past. And the other thing why I don't think it's quite as cheap in this is because the guys have to do it, too. Like, they've made a lot of references to that the guys sleep around to get information or get closer to folks or steal stuff. So it's not, while it's, like, stereotypical and very a trope and... You see it all the time in these type of things. It's everyone is involved with it. And, you know, it's not he's saying that, you know, it's something new, but at the same time, like, it just fits. And the thing is that's great about it is they're all clearly having some emotional issues with it. Not just her, but the guys too.
Yeah, it's true. Like, everybody, that's another good thing about this is that, it shows you the toll that this work takes on everybody involved with it.
Yeah. And something I like she would, I forget which, if it's issue 3 or issue 4, where she meets up with a rival spy who was Russian. And it's clear that she gets point slept with him. And she's just like, sorry about that. and he's kind of like making kind of some jokes about it, being like, hey, it's part of the business. You know, I get it. I've been there. So I think it's cool in that it's not just physical that they're using, but she has to use a lot of her mental stuff or mental in her mind to figure things out. There's physical parts of actual fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's a good mix. I think everyone's very rounded when it comes to mm-hmm. that.
It is. And it acknowledges the work of that the spies do and how, especially the most recent issue really acknowledges, like, how it really destroys them.
Yeah. It's good. Like, I think the series is really cool. And if you're into, if you know someone who is into spy stories and like Bourne movies or old school 70s spy, like Scorpion Connection, I can't believe I'm blanking out on the one that's got the great car chase. French Connection.
The French Connection is a good time. It's not a spy movie. It's like a cop movie, though.
Well, it's a cop movie.
The Italian Job has a much better car chase scene from the 60s movie.
Yeah, if you're into that sort of, if you're into the movie, I think this would be a good comic I would hand to someone and be like, check this out, you'll probably dig it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm.
It's good. Like, it's one and the writer. So it's Ed Brubaker is the writer of it, and Brubaker does solid work. I mean, the guy basically reinvigorated Captain America. And he actually made, you know, Sharon Carter a really fascinating character, and he's good. He's just, I think, solid writer. Like, you can't, you can't go wrong. It's just it's a great series, in my opinion.
Yeah.
On to Lazarus.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. I don't even know how to help describe Lazarus. So Lazarus is about a future world where corporations have kind of carved up the land,
the world.
There's the world, yeah. There's not really governments anymore. There's these corporations. And the main story focuses on the Carlisle family, which runs it. So think more like feudal times than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have the...
They actually call people serfs, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very... It's deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
And they have their kind of champions who fight for them in the Carlisle family. Is her name is Forever Carlisle, and we're slowly learning more about her. She may or may not actually be a family member. I think it's clear that she's not.
Yeah, like you're in a lab.
I think there's something more to it, but yeah, right now it's looking like she was in the lab, who they basically trained from birth to like fight for the family. The current story is now actually more focusing away from the family and onto the people who live in the land that the Carlisles control, which seems to be from about like the Mississippi to California, from what I can tell, and maybe parts of the Southwest, parts of Mexico. That's where it kind of falls apart as to exactly who controls what.
Yeah.
So there is a possible terrorist group. They're investigating it. There's other folks who are looking for work after their family farm was destroyed by some weather and a flood. It's a fascinating series. I think that kind of sums it up. I hope that sums it up. I don't know how.
You know, the thing I always tell people about Lazarus is that the corporate dystopia world that it's about is so close to today that that's what makes it all the scarier.
Yeah. I mean, like
the letter section really explores it. I have to admit, I don't always read all the letter sections because I actually work in this world where we're fighting against corporations as part of my job. So reading more about people having philosophical and political debates isn't necessarily what I would do in the back pages of a comic book, but I love that that conversation is happening there. It's very much explicitly part of the text that way.
Yeah, and it's clear that they are thinking about that. I mean, we've talked about the series before. One of the things that I really liked was we were laying out the timeline and the history and kind of the economics of it all, which I really, really liked and thought it's a cool addition. It's a really fascinating like series and world, and I mean kind of like Pretty Deadly, where it's one I might have not been totally into it the first couple issues. I liked it, but as it's gone on and it's on issue 7, which came out I think last week, like I'm loving the series. I think it's really, really cool.
Yeah, it had like a couple issues where I was sort of waiting for the action to pick up again, and I had faith that it would, and now it's definitely very high stakes, and you know, I like how it's bringing in parts of her past and her childhood, and you can see how those are forming what's happening now. I find some of the story with the families who are trying to escape from, you know, whose land had been flooded. I think it's a flashback, that section, I think. I think it's a bit confusing to me. I want it to be a little bit clearer to me what they're doing, what their situation is. Are those people, is that a flashback?
I don't think it is. I think so. I think it's building towards something. Like the latest issue had them notice that they're not the only ones with their plan.
Yeah.
Because that's the one thing that
Which is why I thought maybe this was in the past. This was like a part of the origin story or something. For some
maybe?
Of these characters in the revolutionary group.
I don't see. This is a good question. I'm not quite sure.
So I guess my only complaint with the series is that it hasn't been completely clear to me when that piece of the story is happening.
Yeah.
But other than that.
Wherever that's building to, though, I think it's going to make everything really, really good. It's one where I can tell that when those pieces fall into line, it's going to be really, really good and impressive once it all kind of lines up.
Yes. I mean, being confused about that one point doesn't make me not think this comic is awesome. I think this is some of the smartest science fiction that's out there. I really I'm glad that the writers are taking the time to explain to people how this is exactly parallels to things that are happening right now and how things that are happening in the world right now are setting up a world where this dystopia could be possible. You know, a lot of people don't really have access news or certainly where they're just getting the sort of CNN headline news level of interpretation and they don't actually understand corporate power. So it is great to see the writers doing this sort of work to make it explicit to the readers, and then that they have this back section open for conversation. It feels very old school, like how the Invisibles had all that conversation in the back pages that became considered interesting enough that they got their own book.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to skip letter pages, so I haven't totally been into it. The things that have stood out to me is where they have clearly fleshed out the world more, you know, bit by bit. But yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating book. Like, the best way I can describe it is it's an allegory about today's world and what everything can kind of go towards when it comes to corporate control and sadly where everything's are going to.
Yeah. One of the other things that I like about the comic is it's hard for me to sometimes hard to get a read on forever. So it's interesting, and seeing what she chooses to do and her reactions to things are always sort of intriguing.
Yeah, I think that was my biggest frustration with the first couple issues, in that she was just kind of, to me, this like badass protector, and clearly she's the main character. But there wasn't anything super interesting into her that makes me want to, at that point, there was nothing that really made me want to find out more about her. I just looked at it, I was like, oh, she's this, you know, kick-ass character who's been trained in martial arts and whatever to regulate, basically. But now that they're kind of delving into what exactly that training is, she's way more sympathetic. I mean, there's kind of an exchange, not to give tons away, there's an exchange in the latest issue with her leader or her trainer, and was like, you know, if I am ordered to kill you, should I? And her trainer's like, yes. And she says, asked the trainer, was like, if you are ordered to kill me, would you do it? And the trainer's like, yeah, our job is to follow orders. To me, it was like really those scenes that have been building up on her training, I think it's what I've been looking for. Like, I wanted to learn more about that character, and it makes her more sympathetic in a weird way of all the stuff she does.
Yeah. I mean, I think she's setting down on a path where she's going to, you know, she's already beginning to question the family. I think it's pretty clear that it's sort of almost telegraphing that she's going to come and question the family and, you know, be a part of some sort of change that's going to happen in society. But when and how, still open question, very open. And it's also really, like I said, it's hard to sort of read what she's going to say or do next.
Yep.
But in a way that feels realistic. It doesn't feel like she's got an empty internal life. It just makes that she's very different from, her face is hard to read deliberately. She was trained that way, you know.
So do you get the same vibe that I'm getting, that it's going to get to a point where she's really going to like come across the downtrodden, and she's either going to buck the leadership in the Carlisle family and maybe help the poor and those rebels, or it's going to be a thing where she has to make a decision of to like turn these supposedly terrorists in, and she, you know, obviously will have issues with that she may or may not follow her orders. Like, that's kind of where I see it going.
I think that it's hard to think of what other possibilities there could be. You know, I think that somebody might be trying to organize the Lazaruses behind the backs of the families. Because she started getting those messages after she met with Joaquin, who's the Lazarus of the family that runs the south of them in Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah, I Yeah, that's the other thing where it's clearly these Lazaruses, these champions, while they are supposed to be fighting each other and kind of representing their family, that they have a bond to themselves. And where that goes is kind of fascinating. Like, I'm hoping it doesn't become a very predictable thing where they all team up and free the downtrodden. To me, that would be like a, well, you know, saw that one coming. I have no idea where that's going to go, though.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. I could see that happening, though. It's hard to say. The comic is still pretty young, though. There's a lot more that we're going to have to figure out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's good, though.
Oh, my God, it's definitely good. I'm really looking forward to the next issue. I feel like it had a bit of a slump in the middle, but it's speeding up again. I don't just mean in terms of the pace. I mean in terms of how close I feel to what's happening and how much I need to know what's happening next.
Yeah, I mean, did you kind of have the issue that I had where it was like you couldn't quite relate to Forever?
Well, I mean, you can't, you know.
Well, I mean, fair, yes, it's a kind of a difficult one to relate to. But, I mean, like, even with the, like, I just didn't have sympathy for her actions.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, well, it's the type of thing where in the beginning, so it's the first issue, in the first issue, there's someone accused of theft. And she's given the order to figure out who did it. So she lines up everybody. And one person comes forward who clearly was not the person who did it, and she's ordered to execute the person. And while there's some slight hesitation, she goes through with it, and then afterwards kind of seeks out the guy's daughter and talks to him about it. And it's like, it was almost too robotic, and that was like, yeah, she has some hesitation, but there wasn't enough for me to feel bad for the position she was in, where she had to follow orders. It just felt too cold to me for a little bit.
I think that, yeah. But I look at her with sort of sympathy, like it's a child who doesn't know what's out there and doesn't understand what's really fully going on, and she's only having her process now of learning what that is.
I can see that.
You know, it's like, she's been really sheltered in a way.
Yeah, I guess I could totally see that. And it makes, you know, it's an interesting take. Like, I think I'm getting more sympathy for her now that we see how she was trained and brought up. As opposed to other things. I don't know. Like, there was something that there was just a disconnect for me. And it wasn't horrible where it was, like, completely broken. But at the same time, I'm like, which character am I supposed to connect with in the series? And I think for at least the first couple issues, I had trouble figuring that out.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know.
Because there wasn't like that.
I think that they center you with sympathizing with her because the first thing you see is her beating up these men who leave her for dead. And even though those men could have been stealing things as they needed to survive, your brain is sort of trained to look at, you know, five men fighting against a woman and that it's probably they're doing something wrong. So I think that sort of the opening sequence makes you side with her, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I don't know. It was a weird. There was just something there. Clearly, there was something there for me where I was kind of like, not quite completely on her side, or with her as a character. I don't know. I think there was that missing of something to relate to for me, but. I don't know, kind of look for a bit more every person in the characters, possibly. I don't know. There wasn't a down-to-earth moment. It was just she's a trained killer, which is fine. Velvet, there's still some things I can relate to. You have her who had this clearly awesome career, and she's sidelined as a secretary for some reason. We don't know why. And her kind of reflecting all that is there's sympathy there, something I can relate to. With Forever, I haven't had that moment yet. I'm starting to with the with her being raised, but
yes, the moments from her childhood are so sad. It's just heartbreaking.
Yes.
This issue most of all, but the last one too.
Been a couple issues that they've been doing that. It's been like two or three issues.
I think that they're really trying to show that, like how much of a fucked up life she's come from.
Yeah. And it's weird that
she's really just a tool.
Actually,
she's just a tool in the eyes of her parents. She's not a person.
Yeah. And that's where I start relating to her, which is really kind of fucked up.
Well, we all feel, you know, that we're dehumanized in parts of our lives. So.
Yeah, and I think that might be part of it is, like, the for me, clearly the thing that is getting to me is I feel like this is a – I have a tool to, you know, get people elected or do whatever. There's things like that I can relate to. But, yeah, I mean, it took to that moment. And it's been, you know, a few issues. It's not – it hasn't been bad because of that. It's just there was that sympathy that was slightly missing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting comparing the two because it really comes down to that is like with Velvet, even though that is so unrealistic or anything that I have been, you know, involved with in my life, at the same time, the fact that she's reflecting on her loss and the tough decisions that she's had to make and how she's not totally happy with everything she's done in her career and life, like that I get and that I relate to. But with Forever, where her being a complete tool and not really in not tool in a bro sort of way, but a tool of this family. It's taken those issues and fleshing her out for me to really start relating to her.
Hmm.
These were two good matches.
I hear
you. The more I think about it, these were good matchup to discuss.
Yeah. I mean, I will admit that, you know, we were talking last week about which books we were keeping up with, and because I have been so crazy busy, the fact that we get free review copies of the books by Image has made it a lot easier for me to keep up with them.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
so thank you, Image, for being considerate about your reviewers. It definitely helps, you know.
They have been rocking on that, yes.
They've got so much great stuff happening now. There's a comic that they're putting out that I haven't had a chance to read that I'm sure I would like. I've been curious about Black Science and Sex Criminals. Both look really good. I just haven't had time to. Have you read either of those?
So I've read Black Science. I love Black Science. I absolutely love Black Science. Highly recommend it. It's kind of, how do I, it's a fucked up Doctor Who meets Lost in Space. I guess would be a good way of describing it, except everyone is the Doctor and
everyone is a doctor.
Yeah, they all kind of have their like personality quirks, and they're all very smart, and seem to have like their long game and plans, like he always seems to do. It's really good. I think it's only three or four issues in. Highly recommend it. Sex Criminals was an interesting one. It would be fascinating to discuss with you. Tons of people have praised it. I haven't liked it as much, and I kind of got in a debate with one of the shops I go to every so often, where he thought it was a fascinating character study, and I thought of it as a weird idea and like a hook that was supposed to be edgy and really wasn't, and I'm still not quite sure where I am in all that. So it could be really, it would be a good one to discuss.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to just go back and find them.
Just ping me.
I've read they had the big Image comics, like here's a few points from everything beast that I looked at.
It's
it looked good then.
Yeah, I mean, if you're like, out of the two, I'm way into Black Science. I love Black Science. I think it's just so, it's fun, it's entertaining. It's a Rick Remender book, who's a pretty solid writer. There's something to me that's just fun and cool about it. Like, I like science fiction, so I, of course, I'm going to like it. Where's Sex Criminals? It's good. You know, it's not, it's praised. Like, there's people have clearly loved it, and it's doing well, and you can't knock it. But, yeah, I mean, it's, I'm kind of still in the I'm not quite sure how where I stand department. So it'd be fascinating.
Anything else that I might not have checked out yet? Or?
If you haven't yet, I would go with The Bunker. Were you a Lost fan?
No, I never really watched Lost.
Shit. Okay.
Actually, I've literally never watched Lost. Not never really. I've literally never watched Lost.
The Bunker would be the one that I would recommend for anyone at this point in time. It is a time-bending mystery where these kids wind up in a bunker, what a shock, and they get messages from their future selves that may or may not be true that are warning them that they are going to bring about the apocalypse. And how to either make this happen or try to change it. Yeah,
oh, interesting.
It's a really trippy mind bender. It's really freaking good. This week actually sees the second issue come out. And for folks who don't know, who listen to the show and might listen to this live, the second issue is already sold out at distributor level. Like, that's how popular it is, and so little printing. And that's one we can only is great on review copies, and we get copies of that. So that's another one I'd really like. And then another Oni book, and we've had the writer on our show, Charles Soule. Letter 44 is on the fifth issue, came out this past week. And that one is the president in after like a Bush-like president and discovers all these wars were fought so he can kind of get R&D money and test weapons, because it turns out that there's this alien device that is being built way out of space and that they want a crew to go. And great.
I'm sorry, I missed that. Can you say that again? They want the crew to do what?
So they sent the crew to go check out what the alien is. This alien thing is. So the president walks in, he's like handed a letter, and it's just basically, oh, just so you know, the reason I did all these things is because there's actually these aliens that may or may not be hostile. We're not quite sure. And you're not going to be able to do all the things that you wanted to, because this is priority number one, and you're one of the very few people who know about this. So what's cool is that part of it is how this president is dealing with it back on Earth and dealing with the various political pressures there. And then because he's one like, oh, I want to do healthcare. Well, you can't really do healthcare because all your money needs to go towards preparing about a possible
alien invasion. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then the cool other thing is then you got the science crew who's like making their way to the ship, and they've been in space for like 8 months or whatever. So all kinds of craziness has been going on there. And what's great is in the five issues, not only has Charles somehow moved forward the political aspect of it, but he's moved forward the sci-fi aspect of it to the point that they've actually gotten to the alien ship and or device and kind of made first contact, which is something I didn't expect for like the first year. And how he's handling both of them has been, I would actually say, fairly realistic, more realistic than I think Hacktivists. What's being discussed, how things would go about and happen, how things would play out. Like, it's done really, really well. And to me, the biggest thing about the series is he packs so much in a single issue, is that he's somehow able to take like these two parts of the series and move it all forward and give you like tons of info, and character development and movement for all of it. in a simple, you know, 24 issues. So what he's done in 5 issues, most writers would tackle like one thing in 5 issues. He's done 2 or 3 major plot points all in 5 issues.
Wow.
So it's packed. It's cool. And that's another one that I can send you and we can discuss and give it its due. I think you'd dig it.
Sure. Cool. Thank you. Yeah, that sounds interesting. It's definitely up our alley.
Yeah. Yeah, and it'd be interesting to see if you have the same thoughts as I did towards how it plays out. But because to me, it's very realistic in that you have this president sitting there being like, well, shit, you know, when I got elected, I promised all these things. How the hell do I explain to the people why I can't give them health care and why I can't do this and why I can't bring the troops home and why I can't pull money from the military? You know, do I just go out and tell the American people reality and how things is? Like, it's very smart and well-written in all of that and how it plays out. I'm still amazed he's able to do everything in so few issues that he's done.
Cool. Well, those are good things to check out. I don't have any books to really point you to, I don't think, that you're not already reading. So I know we owe our listeners a review of She-Hulk, so we'll get on that. We'll get on that.
Yes, and then ironically, that's another book by Charles written by him. So.
Yeah. We'll have to get him on the show for that as well. Anyway, there's another comic creator with a new series out that I'm supposed to be talking to. So hopefully we'll have some cool guests coming up soon.
Yeah, absolutely. We've definitely got a lot of folks that we need to reach out to, and I've actually got 5 or 6 interviews that Dark Horse has set up for the site that will be coming up.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You guys all read graphicpolicy.com, right? Right? Everyone's reading the book.
Yay. Check out. Yeah.
Maybe the comic.
So.
Okay, great.
That'll be a good way to wrap up.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's 11. Huh.
Yes, and with that, that's a good way to wrap up. So, yeah, thank you, everyone. This has been another episode of Graphic Policy Radio. You can catch us every single day at graphicpolicy.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest, whatever, all at Graphic Policy. Thanks again for listening, and as always, I'm Brett.
And I'm Ilana.
Until next time, keep on reading.